Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Professional Book Nerds podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Jill. Oh, I'm so excited for this interview. This is an interview I did with crime writer Karen Slaughter. And if you have listened to this podcast, you know that many of us here love Karen and her books. And so we were super excited. I was super excited to be able to interview her about her new one, False Witness, which is a standalone. And we talk about, writing crime novels, and particularly writing crime novels from the lens of a woman and looking at that through, a woman's gaze versus a man's gaze. We talk about writing during the pandemic and her decision to make the pandemic part of the storyline of the book. She was delightful. I was so excited to talk to her, and I hope you'll enjoy the interview. If you want to get a hold of us, you can go to our website, professionalbooknerds.com. We are on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at ProBookNerds, and you can email us at Overdrive. No, I did it again. Wow, I just did that a couple weeks ago. You can email us at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com. That is the correct email address. So that's it. Not much. Short and sweet today. So I hope you all enjoy this interview I did with Karen Slaughter on the Professional Book Nerds podcast. This is Jill, and my guest today is Karen Slaughter, best-selling author of over 20 novels, including the Will Trent series, the Edgar-nominated Cop Town, and the instant New York Times best-selling Pretty Girls, The Good Daughter, and Pieces of Her. Karen's latest book, False Witness, is out now. Karen, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
It is my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So can you start by giving our listeners a brief introduction to False Witness?
Well, it's really hard for me to talk about the plots of my books because normally I'm like, well, the important things are big spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you who did it if you want.
That might ruin it a little bit.
Yeah, that's probably true. I love this book because I love the characters so much. And I guess at the core, it's about two sisters. One is named Lee, the other is Callie. And one is a lawyer and one is living on the margins of society. And of course, they have the great displeasure of being in the first chapter of a Karen Slaughter novel, which is the worst thing you can do. So, something bad happens to them. And then we catch up with them a few years later and we see the fallout of this bad thing. And one thing I'll say is that it's written during the pandemic, both literally and metaphorically, or no, it's not a metaphor. I mean, both literally and literally.
Right.
It is written during the pandemic. How's that? I wanted to kind of capture how bizarre our lives turned so quickly with the pandemic. So, people are wearing masks and social distancing and using hand sanitizer and that sort of thing. But it's not about the pandemic, it's in the background. Yeah. And that was kind of fun to do, as horrific as the pandemic has been and the tragedy of so many lives lost. But just the idea of being a fly on the wall and putting into words and into story what it was like to be alive this time, if you were involved in a gruesome murder, was a really good, way to tell this story.
Yeah, that was actually one of the things I wanted to ask you about is the fact that it was both written and then sort of like set during the pandemic. And, I think that's a conversation that is happening in the book world among different writers is how much of the pandemic do you acknowledge in your books going forward? Do you sort of pretend it didn't happen? Does it sort of, your book exists in this like alternate world where we didn't have the pandemic and you just went ahead and were like, we're going to set it here. This is the timeline. This is where we are.
Yeah. And it was really like that. I really had to say, am I going to do this or not? Because it had to be a part of the story. So it would be really hard to take it out and for the story to work in some ways. So when I was talking to my editor about incorporating it, I was like, you know, I got to be all in or not. You can't unfuck a goat. So I really had to, you know, not have it in bits and pieces that you could take out and the book still made complete and total sense. I mean, yeah. And you know, part of that is because I've always written about social issues, and if the pandemic was anything, it was a magnifier. It is a magnifier of a lot of social inequalities that we're seeing. So it was a good avenue to explore those things and the vast difference between those who are doing well and those who are not.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. Yeah, you do sort of your books, even with all the gruesome murders and unfortunately being in the first chapter of a Karen Slaughter novel, you do pick topics that are timely and important. And I'm wondering if there was anything outside the pandemic that inspired this particular story.
Absolutely. Because, you know, for me, I think about books quite a lot before I write them. So the idea for the character of Lee Collier, who's the lawyer in the novel, came about 3 years ago. And so I've been thinking about her and looking for the right story for her for a while. And her sister, Callie, came very organically into the story because it was a great opportunity to talk about, again, the different experiences of two very different people during the pandemic, not just in, you know, America, not just in Georgia, but living in this particular part of Atlanta. So it was a good thing for me to get to that point where I was ready to tell this particular story because it deals with trauma. Mm-hmm. And we know a lot about trauma from studying childhood trauma. And we know that as adults, people who experience childhood trauma are more susceptible to heart disease and diabetes and kidney disease and depression and drug addiction and alcoholism. And yeah, all these things can be traced to trauma. So it kind of asks that question of where are we going to be in 20 years, having experienced one of the most horrific year plus time periods any of us have really endured in our lifetimes.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, you do hear talk about like the kids right now. I mean, adults are struggling, and then you have like, how are children handling this? Are they, and what effects is that going to have sort of down the line for them? That's a good point. Yeah. You mentioned that you had the character of Lee first, and she sort of was like, kind of like ruminating in your mind for a few years. Does that usually work for you in your books? Does the character come first and then you sort of wait for the right story to come along?
It depends. With my standalones, that definitely is the way it happens. But when I'm writing about Will Trent and Sarah Linton, obviously I know who those characters are. So it's more like what shit can I throw them into next? You know, how can I make their lives, their relationships more difficult?
Yeah.
You know, they usually get a fairly happy ending at the end of the book, even though they've seen some really atrocious things. But I always want to think about crime through the lens of survivors, whether it's the family members, the actual victim, the investigators, the medical examiners, whatever. So when I'm writing one of their stories, I'm pretty secure in who the characters are. The challenge is finding a new way to talk about them that rewards longtime readers, but also it gives enough information about the past so that people who've never read them before understand where they are. And standalones just work differently because I have to get to know these characters because I write about really serious, horrible things. And I know we've been joking a little bit, but it's very important to me to show violence for what it is. Mm-hmm. And I want to put that in the context of this is what violence leaves behind. These are how people recover or don't recover from these horrific things and kind of asking ourselves, okay, well, this bad thing happened. How do people go on? I mean, that's a good question for right now. Yeah. People are so angry. And it's not just a pandemic. I mean, let's not forget we're coming out of the longest war America has ever been in. And we know just from history that at the end of wars, whether it's Vietnam or Korea or, you know, the world wars, we get these people who come home from war or who have been touched by it, who are so angry. We always see a rise in white supremacist movements, populism, all the things that we're experiencing right now where people are so furious about other people just breathing, you know, and not as forgiving as we should be of other people when they make mistakes or when we disagree with them. So that's kind of encapsulated a bit in the book.
Yeah. One thing I do, it's going to sound very strange. One thing I do enjoy about your books is they're very visceral and they are very raw when it comes to the violence. That's a very weird thing to compliment you on, but you know, you, I know as I'm saying it, I'm like, that doesn't sound great. Hopefully she knows what I mean.
No, you're bloodthirsty. Go ahead. Admit it.
I mean, well, I watch, you know, true crime stuff, so maybe, but I think I just like from a writer's standpoint, like what is it like? How do you even sort of like get into the head of the character who would do these things and then just like writing it? And what is that process like?
Well, you know, a lot of people who know authors find them very annoying because we always look at both sides. We're like, oh yeah, that's a horrible thing. But why did they do that? You know, what? Where's the story in that? And I certainly am guilty of that crime, if I could call it a crime, because I do want to know why people do bad things. And generally there's an explanation, you know, even if it's mental illness. And then, you know, you have to separate mental illness from personality because there are some people who are assholes who are mentally ill.
Right.
And there are some people who are very good, kind, decent people with mental illness, right? So, I mean, all those things are questions that I think about when I write bad guys. But, you know, one of the things I purposely chose to do from my first book many years ago, Blindsided, was I wanted to look at violence, particularly violence against women, in a realistic way. And there were several reasons for that, but two of the most important ones were, one, I wasn't reading that in books, right? Mm-hmm. I was usually seeing violence against women through a male lens, and the way the woman was okay was, you know, she made love to the hero, right, and he fixed everything, you know, which is a great fantasy, but it does not happen. You know, we know healing is something that comes from within. And so that was one reason. But the primary reason is when I was growing up, we would go to my grandparents' house for Sunday dinner almost every weekend. And my grandmother would have a black eye or a cut lip or a broken bone. And my uncles would tease her about being clumsy. I mean, it was just a family joke that she was clumsy. And as I got older, I was like, wait a minute, nobody's this clumsy. My grandfather is beating the hell out of her. And no one wants to talk about it. And that silence only helped my grandfather. It did not help my grandmother in any way. It gave him permission to do it. And so when I wrote that first book and every book thereafter, I think about her life, how damaged she was, how she passed on a lot of that damage to her children, how, you know, we have generations in our family who are affected negatively by this. And so I wanted to talk about that violence. I didn't want to joke about it. I didn't want to sweep it under the rug. I didn't want to fade to black. I wanted to say, look, this is what happens and this is what it leaves behind. And to me, that is probably the singular most important thing when I look back at the books, is that I've been honest about violence, violence against men too. No one really cares when I write about men getting horrible things happening to them. They're like, fair. But, you know, and women who are perpetrators, I write about that. Again, no one really pays attention to that. But I do think it's important to capture that as realistically as possible. Now, if that's not your cup of tea, please don't read my books. There's so many great books you can read. But if that's what you want to know about, then my books are there.
And now we're going to take a quick break for a word from this week's sponsor. It's the dawn of a new era for book clubs, and we're not being dramatic. Literati has just announced their summer lineup, with inspiring book clubs hosted by Malala, Stephen Curry, and Roxane Gay. Authors, leaders, and activists spark lively conversations in 12 unique book clubs, engaging a diverse community of readers from all around the world. That means you can talk about Stephen Curry's favorite books with Stephen Curry, for real. They also host exclusive interviews with the authors themselves, where you can ask your biggest questions and get the insider answers you won't find in any other book club. All book club members can shop the entire Literati library at discounts that are so steep they look like cliffhangers, with many books over 50% off. Move freely between clubs, or use the standard membership to access everything and choose the books you want delivered. Reimagine what a book club can be. Redeem your free trial at literati.com/booknerds. Head to literati.com/booknerds to learn more and read more with Literati. literati.com/booknerds. Yeah, no, that's, I think you touched on something that I couldn't quite articulate, which was, yes, it's violence against women through the lens of a woman, which you don't see a lot. And I think it's why I like and appreciate your books, but I also think the first time I read it, I don't want to say I was shocked. I was unprepared because I hadn't read books like that. And then I'm like, no, actually, maybe I am bloodthirsty. Wow. Okay. I'm like, no, yeah. I want more of this.
Accept it. It's who you are. Well, I think that we all have a natural curiosity. I mean, if you look at, okay, well, what are the best-selling books? Crime books. Mm-hmm. What are the most popular podcasts? Crime podcasts, you know, or books about crime, or, you know, people are interested in this. I will say, when I was first started out, I would have so many women come up to me and say, oh, you know, I'm so embarrassed, but I love this kind of book. And now I don't think you're embarrassed, right? It's just like, of course I'm interested in this. Every woman has a moment every single day when they hear a noise, or they get startled, or they think, well, this is it. I'm going to be raped. Right. Or, you know, that just flash of a sense of loss of powerlessness that most men outside of an incarceration situation never experience in their entire lives. So that's what I like to write about. And, you know, let's be honest, you know, this 85% of all fiction buyers are women. And I'm glad that the 15% of men, those sexy, sexy men who want to read women's books by women, are paying attention. But I think I can write about what scares women in a way that scares women.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe that is what it is. That, because it does, it feels very real, and it feels very authentic. Yeah. And I think you're right about how probably when you first started writing, we weren't having these conversations. Like, we weren't talking openly about violence against women or domestic violence or any of that. And now we are in a place where there are podcasts and there are the books. And so you, I think, in some way have given, I don't want to say permission for us to be okay with it, but it's definitely given, you sort of like liberated this idea that it's something we shouldn't talk about, or we should be embarrassed to be curious about. Yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Cause again, the silence only protects the perpetrators.
Yeah, for sure. So False Witness is a standalone. You do have your Will Trent books, which I love as well. I'm curious, when you sort of, you know, there are a lot of crossover topics and themes among them, as we've discussed, how do you decide what to write next? You know, do you go back and forth? Is it just sort of whichever character speaks to you? Is it, you know, like conversations with your editor, I'm sure, play into it, but like, how do you balance those series with the standalones?
You know, my editor has been with me since my second book. And so her position is, you write what you want to write, and we will be very happy with that, which is a gift to a writer.
Yeah.
Because she's never saying, oh, well, you know, this would sell more if you wrote about why, or, you know, she doesn't direct that. She just wants me to write what I want to write. Unfortunately, I'm writing stuff people want to read, so it's worked out. But we, you know, we do have general conversations when I'm ready to write a book. With False Witness, I came up with Lee 3 years ago. And I was just looking for a story to tell, and it started to gel. And I meet with her generally in non-pandemic years. And we go over what I'm thinking. Normally we do this in Miami because the HarperCollins international convention for the company is in Miami most years. So, you know, it's a quick flight down there in the winter, which is the only time you'd ever want to be in Florida.
Yeah.
Unless you're a mosquito. And so we were talking about this in, I think it was late January of 2020. And then when we both got home, the pandemic was just like jumping off, right?
Yeah.
And I said, I really want to put the pandemic in the book. And she was like, that, you know, normally she's totally okay, but she said, well, why do you want to do that? And then I started talking to other authors and, you know, I know a lot of authors. I did some Facebook interviews with them. Like, what's the pandemic like? Even like Mary Kay Andrews lives 5 minutes from me, but it's like, what's it like over where you live? And so everyone had a different answer about whether or not they wanted to write about the pandemic. And a lot of people said, no, it's too close. It's too anxiety making. I write stuff that's meant to take you out of your day-to-day life, escapism, mm-hmm. blah. And Mike Connolly said he was actually going to incorporate it in his book for 2020 that was A Lincoln Lawyer. And he did. And I thought, well, if Mike can do it and he doesn't get a lot of shit for it, which yeah. he didn't, then I'll do it. And I just thought, you know, I got to go all in on this. And I was very careful with it, though. Like, even at the end of the book, I said, have I used masks too much? Right. So I went back and did a word count, how many times mask has appeared, that kind of thing, because I didn't want it to intrude in the story. But it actually solved some problems as far as plotting, because I have a woman, Lee, who is not living with her teenage daughter. The daughter's living in the suburbs with Lee's husband, ex-husband. And I thought readers are going to hate this woman for not living with her daughter.
Yeah.
But the pandemic is a perfect excuse because she's in the suburbs. She's going to this pricey school. You know, it's better for her. And Lee is the one who is suffering because of this detachment she feels. So that in some ways was a godsend to explain that.
Yeah, I think that'll be interesting to watch going forward, is how authors handle 2020 in their books, or even just like acknowledging it, even if a book is set like 2020, like we're still very much in this, obviously. Like there's a,
yeah.
this is not going away anytime soon. So I
know we're talking about it like it's over.
I know it's not over. It's not over. Wear your masks if you know, if you want to
get your vaccination.
I think that'll be an interesting trend, but I wonder if it's, you know, you mentioned, you know, Michael Connelly and, The Lincoln Lawyer in your books. I wonder if it's a genre thing. I wonder if certain genres make it a little more acceptable to discuss the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I read a lot of romance, and I know romance community is like, we're not sure about writing about the pandemic. Like, we're very much escapism.
Right.
So
yeah,
that'll be kind of a book trend, I think, to kind of watch going forward.
Yeah, you know, if you think about some of the seminal pandemic books, right? Like Pale Horse, Pale Rider. Yes. I think Catherine Ann Porter published that collection in 1939, right? So she went through the 1918 flu pandemic, yeah. and she writes about it. And I mean, the Pale Rider is death coming for her. And she almost died from the flu. And she talked about in the story how people had a different color to the skin and a different smell if they were infected. And she talks about the economic uncertainty. She's worried about being evicted. She can't find a space in the hospital. Mm-hmm. But it took her almost two decades before she was able to write about it. So, I mean, that just tells you that some things are really hard for people to write about. I think we'll see it in memoir. I think we'll see it through the lens of loss. Because if you think about all the kids who've lost both parents, a parent or both parents to COVID, or the number of fathers, I mean, Molly Jong Fast wrote a really beautiful essay about losing fathers to the pandemic because so many older men were lost. Mm-hmm. So I think it will be written about. I think as a crime writer, we're uniquely positioned to write about the pandemic because we generally write about things happening in the now. I mean, historically, crime fiction has always held up a mirror to society. So, you know, that plays into it. But also, we write a book a year. So it seems more urgent to me, at least it seemed more urgent to capture how crazy our lives got, right? And how crazy people got, and things that we won't remember, like someone sneezes and you look at them like they're a pariah, or, you know, men wearing their mask below their nose because they're afraid their dicks will fall off, or, you know, people worrying about microchips, which obviously are in Viagra, you know, they're not small enough to be in the vaccine. Yeah. So, you know, things like that. Or one of my favorite things is all these distilleries shut down during the pandemic and started making hand sanitizer. So everywhere you go, you smell tequila and rum.
Yep.
It's like a prom.
Yep.
So it was that kind of stuff is what I wanted to capture.
Funny, we were using hand sanitizer at one point. I was just like, is this vodka? This smells just like straight up vodka. Like, what are we using? Yeah, no, that's very true. That's very true. Well, I've loved talking to you. I just have one question left, which is, what do you hope readers take away from reading False Witness or any of your books?
Well, with any book, I want the first reaction to be, crap, I can't believe how great that story was. I'm so sad it's over. I want more. I mean, that's my job, is to entertain people. I mean, I know I write about social issues and other things, but if all you take away from False Witness or any of my books is, that was so worth however many hours I lost sleep to finish that, then I've done my job. If you want deeper meaning, it's there. But I do think that all of my books end on hope. You know, people get up the next day, no matter what happens, and they go about their business and they connect with other people. And I mean, that's really the plight of being a human, a successful human, is that we always have to rely on hope that tomorrow is going to be better.
Yeah, that's great. Karen, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Adam Sokol and Jill Grunewald, and presented by Overdrive. For more information, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun: Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.